Sister Annie thinks I'm a science project. But you know something? I guess I'm not so average anymore.
Hey everyone, welcome once again to the secret world of Cal and Jack, in which Cal and Jack watch Alex Mack. I'm Jack, and joining me, as always, it's my friend and yours, it's Callan.
I'm being a droid.
Ah, right. Okay. Why are you being a droid, Callan?
No reason. Because this was a droid-heavy episode of Alex Mack, the television show from the 90s.
This was exceptionally droid-heavy. Surprisingly droid-heavy, I would say.
Mm.
That's a good fact about this episode, but do you want to hear a fact about just things generally, Cal?
Things generally or Alex Mack?
Well, you know.
A Mack fact, a Mack fact for today.
Tune.
Massive tune, that one. This week's Mac Fact, I'm going back to our recently discovered Alex Mack fanfic, The Secret Return of Alex Mack.
Mm.
The true gift, Callan, that you've brought to me and all our listeners. For those who don't remember, it's the 1.1 million word, 235 chapter fanfiction. The Secret Return of Alex Mack, written by Diane Castle in December 2012.
How many words in are you now?
Well, what I'm doing, Cal, I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I am sort of flicking through, and it seems like in each chapter there is a little nugget of gold.
Mm.
So I thought, you know, although reading the whole thing would be rewarding and probably hugely entertaining, I think it's going to be just as valuable for me to pick out a fun little tidbit from a chapter every now and then as we progress through the series of the actual TV show.
All right, let's hear it then.
So remembering that previously we learned that The Secret Return of Alex Mack is about Alex teaming up with Catwoman and Buffy and Willow from Buffy the Vampire Slayer and someone from like Battlestar Galactica. She's joined this superhero league.
Hermione from Harry Potter is in there as well.
Hermione, yeah. So she's joined up for this all-female supergroup.
The Spice Girls of pop culture.
So this story takes place somewhere after the events of the whole Alex Mack series.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to tell what's true to the canon of the series and what liberties the author of this has taken. But this caught my eye as I was scanning through chapter one earlier today. So the first few chapters seem to be about Alex sort of transitioning into she's fully accepted her powers, and she looks like she's doing what we've always wanted her to do and kind of become a bit of a superhero.
Mm.
But the first part of this story is about her, I believe, setting up her sort of secret, like establishing herself as Alex Mack, the secret identity, and then inhabiting the role of superheroine.
Mm.
So it is still, even though in that universe, she's still whinging about homework and schoolwork and stuff.
Mm.
But this is what caught my eye. Finding days of homework assignments waiting for her was hardly the reward one of the saviors of the multiverse was supposed to get. Having Ray kiss her for 10 solid minutes before she had to go home, definitely the kind of reward she was supposed to get.
Oh, no.
I don't know about that, Cal. I don't know how I feel about that.
10 solid minutes.
10 solid minutes is too much kissing.
That's too much kissing.
And especially with Ray.
Yeah, like maybe George Mack, but not Ray.
That's just one kiss from George Mack.
Yeah, one of those Alex Mack kiss sandwiches with George on one side, Barbara on the other. Yeah, how graphic does it get?
I don't know. He doesn't seem to appear anywhere else in this chapter. It's just kind of a mention.
Yeah, just a throwaway.
So I wonder, do you think that is a reflection of something that's going to happen in the true Alex Mack series, or is that a liberty that the author's taken?
I think that's a liberty. I think they were always supposed to be just platonic friends.
Yeah.
I don't think that the show even really flirts with the idea of a will they, won't they type situation.
No, but it does seem like the sort of thing that they could introduce out of nowhere for one episode and then just forget about completely.
Yeah. There was one episode where like they were going to a dance or something and Ray was going to invite her and and they got, there was some kind of like jealousy
thing. Yeah, right. Yeah.
But I don't think it was either of them were particularly taking it seriously.
No. And I think that was still friendship based.
Yeah. Yeah. She's always been very clear that Hot Scott is who she's into.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
So,
well, I guess we just have to wait and see.
Yeah.
And I personally couldn't be more excited. Speaking of things I'm excited about, I'm excited to talk about Season 3, Episode 4 of The Secret World of Alex Mack, Operation Breakout, which was the episode we watched today. And this episode, we're really back to classic classic Alex Mack, classic Vince chasing after Alex, Vince coming up with some sort of harebrained scheme using some weird technology to try and draw the kid into the chemical plant to capture her. In this episode, he comes up with this plan where he's, so first of all, he's bought a droid. He's bought a robot. Whether or not it doubles as a sex robot, we don't know at this stage. It's not entirely clear from the episode, but he's bought something called the PVP 9000 security droid, which is a little robot that rolls around and has a laser and acts as a one unit security force. And he's so convinced of the power of this robot and its security abilities, he convinces Daniel Atron to fire the whole night security team at the chemical plant. So that's the setup. The second part of his plan is that he is going to use the power of the human conscience to draw the kid out of hiding into the power plant by spreading a rumor that they've already caught the kid from the accident. And that the kid is now going to live in quarantine at the chemical plant and have all sorts of horrible experiments done to them forever. So the idea being that the real kid, believing this, will feel so bad that they'll have to come to the plant and try and break out the kid that they've made up.
Yeah. Those two halves of the plan seem like they don't really rely on each other. Like, you don't need the robot to do the first half of the plan.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, I think he's overcomplicated by bringing in the robot element, I think.
Yes, yes. But story-wise, it kind of works towards the end of the episode how it all pans out. But anyway, so he employs a janitor, or a guy to step in as the janitor at the high school, and he turns up and starts spreading the rumor that they've caught a kid and that they're in lockdown, and the rumor spreads throughout the school, eventually makes its way to Lewis, who eventually tells Alex and Ray that they've caught this kid, and it's Beth Gaskin, who no one's seen for a couple of days, and Lewis is convinced that she's been taken by the power plant, the chemical plant. So Alex essentially falls for the trap, and her and Ray go to the chemical plant at nighttime to try and break the kid out, playing right into Vince's hands, and Alex breaks in into the chemical plant. Luckily, there's no security because Vince has fired them all, but she does get chased by the droid in what was a pretty good chase sequence.
Yeah.
Considering it was a small, slow robot and Alex Mack.
Mm.
So she's sort of running around getting chased by the droid. She manages to lock it in a cupboard for a bit, but it gets out. She keeps it at bay for a little while, but then she eventually makes it out of the... she zaps the robot. The robot explodes, and she makes it back out into the sort of car park of the chemical plant, having realized that there's no kid and it was all a trap. And she's trying to escape with Ray, but Vince has sort of spotted these two figures in the shadows, so he goes after them. But he gets stopped because Annie has cottoned onto Alex's plan, and she turns up and plays heavy metal into Vince's walkie-talkie, deafening him and making him fall over on the ground so Alex and Ray can get away.
Yep. Good plan.
Good plan. Solid plan. And then, of course, Vince has to answer to Daniel Atron for not only having spent a lot of money on a security droid that has now exploded, he's also fired all of his security guys, and he needs to sheepishly try and hire them all back.
Did we get into the frog subplot?
No. Well, was that a subplot?
Well, it kept, like, you know, alluding that it was going to be.
Yeah.
Like, it's something that this show does a lot, which really pisses me off, is it does set up for something that's interesting and then just never pays it off. I said to you as this was happening.
Well, tell us the frogs. Tell us the frog story, Callan.
So the episode starts with Ray and Alex just having a chat about, you know, how school's going and just general kid stuff. And Alex starts saying how she's not looking forward to having to dissect a frog in next week's science class. And they also reveal that it's like not just, you know, the random frog that the science teachers kind of pull in. It's like the class pet frog, Wilbur.
Yeah.
Which, like, I don't think that the schools ever make you dissect the pet frog that you've given a name. Like, that is just cruel.
And they don't come alive. They don't turn up alive.
No, they like order in bulk a bunch of like frozen frogs that you anyway. She's kind of lamenting that she's gonna have to dissect Wilbur, which is cruel.
Yeah.
And halfway through the conversation, you start hearing a frog ribbit from her backpack, and it's clear that she's kind of broken out the frog from its prison. And I think, you know, ultimately what the show was trying to do is set up that she has a conscience, and that she, if she heard that there was someone being held hostage, that she would want to help them, which I don't feel like the show really needed to do that. Like, we kind of know that Alex is a good kid.
Yeah.
So I was watching the whole time, kind of waiting for, I thought something was going to happen. Like, you know, she goes to the plant to break out the kid and like uses the frog as a decoy to distract the droid or something. The frog was going to play some role in the plot at some point.
Maybe the frog was going to jump in and start piloting the droid. Like a mech?
Yeah.
Like a frog mech?
Just something, because there are about 4 points at which, you know, throughout the show that someone notices that she's got a frog in her backpack, and she's like, have you got a frog in your backpack? And she says different funny things at different points. Yep. And then the end of the episode, they just like say, oh yeah, you got that frog.
Better let it go.
That's good. Like, that's a better let it go. Goes nowhere. They don't show the frog either at all.
Like, no. They show it at the end. They show it at the end when she lets it out.
Do they? I thought they just had it in a box.
Yeah.
Did they actually show it?
Yeah. Do you pay attention to the show at all, Cal? Also, the frog's name was Willy.
I don't know.
Yeah, she let it out. She at the end, she pulls it out of the box and puts it on the rug and then sort of pats it on the bum and it jumps away.
Mm. Well, it was very disappointing that the frog didn't play a more pivotal role.
Yeah.
And that the opening credits didn't say, in introducing Willy as the frog.
You really wanted more of a Chekhov's frog.
I did. Well, if you have a frog ribbiting in the first act. Hey, this is like kind of a related thing, but like watching this episode, and I think you may have made a reference to it, made me start thinking about the robot in Rocky IV again.
Oh yeah. Me too. Whenever I see a like 90s robot, immediately start thinking about the love robot from Rocky IV.
Well, and so I was just Googling to see what the name of the robot was.
Yeah.
But I accidentally came up with this like story behind how that robot ended up in Rocky IV.
Yeah.
And it's actually pretty interesting, and I kind of want to share it.
Before you get to it, we'll quickly say our connection to the Rocky robot is that we used to do a podcast called Would You Like Franchise With That, where we'd watch entire movie franchises. So one of the franchises we did was Rocky, and probably it was certainly my favorite franchise. I think it was yours too, Cal.
I think me too, yeah.
So
sure.
We watched, at a period a couple of years ago, we watched all 7 Rocky movies, which meant probably, you know, I wouldn't have watched it otherwise, but we watched Rocky IV. And Rocky IV is this incredible film where Rocky, who was Rocky fighting? Was that the one where he goes to the Soviet Russia?
Drago, was Drago. Right.
Basically, Rocky ends the Cold War through a boxing match, and he has this obnoxious brother who kind of just...
Yeah, brother-in-law.
Brother-in-law, right. Is just this hideous man through every movie, and he just gave us the shit the whole time. But in the fourth one, Rocky is really rich, and so he buys Paulie a robot, or Paulie buys it for himself. Rocky gets a robot, and Paulie kind of falls in love with it.
Yeah.
And then Paulie dies, and the robot brings flowers to his grave.
Yeah.
Did that happen?
Maybe. I don't know.
The robot's definitely at the funeral.
Is it?
I don't know.
He doesn't die. I think he dies between movies, doesn't he?
Yeah, right. Possibly.
I think that might have just been a joke that we made. I don't know if it actually happened.
There's some very heartfelt scenes between Paulie and the robot.
It's one of those kind of cultural fever dream things where people kind of go, was there a robot in that movie? Yeah. Like, and everyone's kind of unsure of whether that actually happened or whether they were just like at home sick from school and kind of like misremembering what happened in Rocky IV.
Yeah.
But there is a robot in it. And I have this story behind it, which I don't know, we didn't do our research at the time, but it's actually just kind of interesting. Okay, so it began with the work of Robert Dornick, founder of International Robotics, who believes that certain situations robots can deal with autistic children better than humans can. Soon after appearing on a talk show to discuss his theories, Dornick was contacted by Stallone, whose son was autistic. And autism was kind of less understood than it is today. So Stallone had kept his son's autism a secret and stopped doing any publicity involving his family until eventually in 1985 when he revealed his son's autism to People magazine. So Stallone and Dornick worked with his son using a robot in particular named Seiko. At the time, Stallone was going through a divorce, and in order to keep his kids close to him, he wrote his older son, Sage, into Rocky V as Rocky's son.
Yep.
And including the robot Seiko, he could have Sergei, his son, work with Dornick on set. So it was kind of a mechanism for him to have his son on set with him.
Right.
Once the robot was in the movie, though, Stallone began to write more and more scenes for it. Eventually, these scenes were cut, as I suppose even Stallone concluded that spending so much time on the robot was distracting to the overall tenor of the film.
I can honestly say I thought about nothing else while I was watching Rocky IV.
Yeah, so I thought that was just an interesting bit of trivia.
Yeah,
The reason why, because you're watching it and you go, I'm sure there is a reason why this robot is in this film, because it makes absolutely no sense. And it's actually quite a sweet one.
It is. It sounds like a sweet story that kind of got out of hand. If I was Sylvester Stallone, like, I can imagine this behind the scenes story where the robot's in the film so much that Sylvester Stallone's son kind of is getting jealous that Sylvester Stallone loves the robot more than him.
And we're like, he's like somehow written it so that at the end of the thing, like, it's no longer Rocky who's fighting the guys, it's the robot, and the robot just replaces Rocky in the series. And there are several more franchise entries with only the robot.
My God. Seriously, people, if you haven't seen Rocky IV, get involved. You don't need to watch any of the other ones. They're hugely entertaining movies, but especially number four is just completely bananas.
It's nuts.
Yeah.
So, not really a Mac fact, but a fact.
But a great, great fact. Great fact. And, you know, there's been more tenuous Mac facts in the past. So.
That's true. I mean, I suppose Mac facts have now kind of just turned into, you know, observations that have some tenuous connection to Mac.
So, speaking of this episode of Alex Mac, bit of fun George Mac action in this episode.
There was a funny exchange with them where Alex is trying to get some info out of George Mac about whether or not this rumor about the kid being held captive at the plant is true. And she asked him if anything interesting happened to him that day. And he says, well, I got lost in the stationery cupboard again.
And Scooter had to come and let me out.
I just love how much the show is leaning into how much of a doofus George Mac is.
And I wonder, I don't know whether it was just a coincidence or if it was on purpose, but later in the episode when Alex is getting chased by the robot around the plant, she leads it into like a supply closet and then locks it in.
Yeah.
I was wondering if that was a parallel done on purpose or if it was just the only thing you can do with a robot that's chasing you.
Yeah. I wouldn't give the show credit, but it did. You know, had some nice symmetry to it.
Yeah. The other great thing George Mac did today was try and program the VCR.
Yeah, which I think the show was very happy with itself. It had I think this episode actually had quite a few just well shot.
Visually very interesting episode.
Yeah, just like interestingly lit, well shot, like interesting camera angles and lenses.
Yeah.
So at this kind of like weird wide angle shot where Anne and Barbara Mac were in focus programming the VCR, but you could also see the entirety of the living room as well.
Yeah.
It was a very 90s kind of like, it kind of reminded me of like Malcolm in the Middle or something.
You ever programmed a VCR, Cal?
I mean, it's not that hard.
It can't be that hard. Sure,
you just
not that hard.
Plug it in. There was like, I mean, I guess the hard bit was back in the day when the VCR would plug in through the aerial port rather than VGA cables, and you would have to tune the TV to the frequency of the VCR.
Yeah, right.
Remember that?
Yeah, vaguely. Also, setting the clock was always difficult because it was always in like 24-hour time, and I was never in the army as a 12-year-old, so I didn't know what 24-hour time was.
Yeah. How do you get that extra 12 hours in the day? I don't think I ever worked out how to make the VCR do the smart things. Like, you know how you could like program it to start recording at a certain time?
Yeah, yeah.
Do all that kind of fun stuff.
One of the things that we used to tape off the TV, did you ever watch that show, The Adventures of Lena and Woodley on Channel 2?
I've seen a little bit of it ambiently, I didn't like watch it religiously or anything.
Me and my family were a big fan of The Adventures of Lena and Woodley, which was essentially a sitcom that was on the ABC here, starring these two comedians who are still kind of working now and have been sort of Australian favourites for a long time. They're called Lena and Woodley. And
it's kind of Mr. Beanie, isn't it? Like, it's quite physical humour.
Very physical. Kind of Mr. Beanie, a bit like Laurel and Hardy, like they're a two-person act. It's kind of old-fashioned in that sort of way. But yeah, pretty family-friendly. Anyway, we all loved the show, and it was on Channel 2, so we taped it. We VCR taped it, but because it was... it was back in the days of VCR. We had to, you know, try and program the VCR, which my dad might have been able to do. He might have done it. Otherwise, it was just put the tape in and press record while we were watching the show.
Mm-hmm.
But because that's how we had to do it, we'd often miss out on the start of the show.
Yeah.
And there was always a cold open, which sort of led into the rest of the episode. And we had these tapes from the TV that started, you know, 30, 40 or a minute or so late. So there was all these bits of the show that we missed. And a little while ago, I found the DVD of the show in an op shop.
Mm.
So I bought it and I started watching it again. And there's all these scenes that I'd never seen before. So I was getting all these jokes like set up that paid off later in the episodes that I never understood. But I was like, oh, it's because at the start, the bloody marquee got sucked into the wood chipper. Oh, I get it.
My favorite thing about like recording stuff off the telly was I probably would have been a little bit older, but like recording weird movies that started at like 11 o'clock on SBS so I could watch them the next day.
I know the movies you mean.
No, that's not.
I know. We all know what he's talking about.
No, it's like actually more like horror movie. Okay. But like what I was going to say is...
You dirty boy.
They were horror movies. Anyway.
horrified by what you get up to.
I wouldn't keep video evidence of watching those other things.
You don't video yourself watching them.
Well, how do you do it? How are you recording stuff off the TV? You set up the TV and you put a video camera in front of it, right? No, but like you would start it recording, and because you would have those long play tapes that recorded for like 4 hours, then you would just end up recording like whatever happened to be on SBS at like 2 a.m. in the morning.
I know what you were recording it to.
There was just some really weird, like it's like that period in the late 90s when just weird like animation was like a big thing, like that kind of MTV era animation. And I just remember finding some of these like really strange things that I've never been able to like track down afterwards, of 2 a.m. crazy animated things on SBS
that
I just like absolutely loved and only found because I happened to be accidentally recording something on TV earlier.
Yeah, and those sort of things, especially from that era, like there's no way you'll ever be able to find that again.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like you probably don't even have, like unless you've still got the tapes, maybe you could upload them somewhere and someone could comment on them.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, if you've got nothing, no information about it apart from the vague description,
There's a few that I like remembered and then was able to track down later. Right. There's one that was called The Head, which is this. I'll send you a link of what it was. Mm-hmm. But it was this weird animated series from, it says it's from 1994, about these aliens that invaded and they lived in your head.
Oh, wow. Yeah, okay.
And anyone who had one of these aliens in them had these just like, the head grew to this ginormous size.
Yeah.
And it just like really creeped me out as a kid. Mm-hmm. And I think I had nightmares about it.
This is exceptionally, I'm looking at the images now. That's exceptionally creepy.
Yeah, and so there's just a bunch of stuff like this where it's like just really strange, like nightmare fodder.
Yeah,
that was just like on at 2 a.m. Mm. That I don't know has probably like you know shaped a bunch of weird subconscious stuff that I've got going on.
Yeah. Hey, speaking of heads.
She doesn't have a cat. Her mom's name isn't Pat. But she always, well, almost always wears a hat. Alex Mack wears a hat.
How about that?
How about that? A couple of hats today.
Yeah.
She's back in a pickless cap.
Yep.
You know, I think from previous seasons you were familiar with these, but I've never heard or seen them outside of the Alex Mack universe.
Mm.
It's like a peak cap, but just without the peak.
Mm.
It's got a little clip closer and everything.
Yeah.
What a strange hat.
I mean, not a functional hat.
No.
No sun protection from that hat.
And she also wears it backwards.
Yeah.
And I guess there's a couple of other interesting hats. Like in the nighttime when they go and break into the chemical plant, Alex and Ray go off first. And Ray's just wearing kind of a standard black beanie. But Alex has a great black like Russian hat, like with ear flaps, like a furry hat.
Yeah. What do you call those hats? Those are cool.
They have a name. They definitely have a name, but I can't remember what it is now. It's not a Davy Crockett hat.
Russian hat. There we go. Aviator hat, they call it.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Or a Russian Shakpa winter hat.
I prefer Shakpa winter hat. I think an aviator hat is like, it's got the ear flaps, but it's like leather and it's shaped more like the cap.
Well, you know, I think she was wearing more of an aviator hat because it wasn't furry all around.
No, she was wearing a Shakpa for sure.
No, it had dark sides because the Shakpa is like all fur.
Right. I thought it was all fur.
Mm.
And, you know, to be fair, you thought the frog's name was Wilbur, so.
That's true. And then there's also like those furry hats that like Habib Nurmagomedov, what's his name?
Excuse me?
It's like a... UFC fighter who always finishes and puts it, he's like Russian guy and then he puts this like hat on which
no, Callan, you're thinking of Drago from Rocky IV.
He's basically the UFC's Drago.
Yeah, right. Does he put a Russian hat on after he wins?
Yeah, let me get a photo for the podcast audience.
Yeah.
Hat. It's a good hat. Just so maybe you can describe it for the audience.
All right.
At home. His hat. I think Alex would look good in one of these hats.
Oh, right. Wow. Okay.
He kind of just looks like it's his hair. If you didn't know that was his hair, but it's like a kind of woolly winter hat that he wears.
Like I'm seeing, like it almost looks like a novelty afro wig.
Yeah, it looks like a novelty afro wig, but it's actually a hat.
It looks, I guess it's probably sheepskin. It looks like sheepskin with wool still attached.
Mm.
And it's sort of, like a big round dome.
Yeah.
What a great hat.
And I just kind of love that he's probably like the world's most dangerous like combat sports person.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like he like wears this hat that makes him kind of look like a kid's birthday clown.
Yeah. 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 Never say that to him, his face.
Oh, no. He would choke me out. Yeah, but I think Alex could rock that look.
Absolutely. Another great hat in this episode was the one that that Annie wears when she realizes that Alex has broken into, is going to go and break into the plant, you know, against her strict directions.
Yeah.
So Annie gathers
unnecessary this hat. Like. Yeah.
So Annie gathers up some of her gear. She gets a torch and a rope and some of her sort of going to help out Alex stuff. And then she plonks this hat on her head, which is like, It's kind of like a big felt sun hat sort of thing.
I think it's supposed to be like a kind of Dick Tracy private eye.
Yeah, right. Hat. Yeah.
But it's, one, it just looks too big. And two, it's nighttime.
Yeah.
And three,
it's Annie.
Wet sock. She should have put a wet sock on her head.
Got her.
Classic Annie.
So yeah, some good hats this episode. And I've learned about a new good hat that I'd never heard of before.
Yeah. I guess it's called a Khabib hat.
A Kabonnet. Well, that's going to just about do us today for this episode of The Secret World of Cal and Jack, in which Cal and Jack watch Alex, Matt. Cal, have you had a good time?
I mean, it's not like I had anything else I could be doing right now.
I had a good time with this episode.
Yeah, no, this was good. Other than me being really pissed off that they just wasted their frog opportunity. But, you know, we've all wasted a frog opportunity at one point in our lives.
Wasted their frog opportunity?
I can see the Shark Tank pitch now. Yeah. I've got a frog opportunity for you.
I enjoyed this episode. I thought it had classic Alex Mack shortcomings, but it also had some classic Alex Mack like high points, like just a little smidge of George Mack here and there being a goofus.
Mm.
You know, the Alex Mack version of Paulie's sex robot.
Mm.
It was all good stuff.
Yep. No, it's good. It's a great show.
It's a top show, and I look forward to watching more of it with you, Callan.
We've made a good choice.
I think we have made a good choice. Well, join us next time as we watch season 3, episode 5 of The Secret World of Alex Mack. Until then, you can send us an email if you want to let us know what you're up to. Secretworldpod@gmail.com is the address. Until next time, I've been Jack.
I've been Cal.
My best friend Ray thinks it's cool.
My sister Annie thinks I'm a science project.
And we'll speak to you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.